It's the story, stupid. Welcome to the Word Drip Podcast. Podcast. After a very long hiatus, we are back doing some recordings again. Today we are bringing you an interview with Brandon Sanderson, the author of Elantris and Mistborn, and one of our moderators at wordtrip.com was able to catch up with him at a writing conference and bring you a little interview. So without further ado, here is Brandon Sanderson and Penguin, our moderator from Wordtrip.
Next one's in August.
In August.
Yep.
Which is Mistborn, the Well of Ascension.
Yes.
Looking forward to it.
Oh, thank you.
Extremely well. So I just want to get started. Where did you get the idea that you wanted to be a writer and to tell stories?
I got the idea from Barbara Hanley.
Okay. Who is she?
She's a fantasy writer. That was the first fantasy book that I read. It was given to me by a teacher when I was 14. I hadn't been reading very much in her class with my English teacher. I'd, you know, kind of just been languishing, and so she gave me my first fantasy novel and said, here, read this, I think you'll like it, you're kind of a strange guy. And I absolutely loved it, she was right, and that was the death knell for me doing anything, you know, useful with my life, and instead I became a writer and a miscreant.
Yeah. So did you start writing right away when you were 14?
I did. I spent that summer, it was right about the end of my 8th grade year that I found, I discovered fantasy books, and I spent that summer reading just, you know, like a madman. And I think it actually was about a year later that I started trying my own hand at it. I just loved it so much, I wanted to be part of it, and I wanted to see, you know, I couldn't stop myself from giving it a try myself. I actually went to college as a chemistry major, biochem, but that was because my mother convinced me that that authors don't make any money, which, you know, she may or may not have been right about, but I was an author at heart anyway. There is no getting beyond it, so I changed after my freshman year to do English instead and decided to become a writer and gave it my best shot.
And I think it's a very good one.
No. It did take, you know, it takes time. It took me about 8 years from the time that I really seriously decided to do it. During that time I wrote 13 books. I sold number 6, which is Elantris, which is the first one that I published. And I actually got a deal for number 6 and number 14, which was Mistborn.
So did you start writing short stories then?
I started straight to novels.
Straight to novels.
That's what I like to read. I figured, even as a kid, I thought, I don't, you know, enjoy reading short stories as much. So why write what I don't enjoy as much? Why not just write what I like to read? And so that's what I started doing. A lot of people say that short stories are a better way to break in, which is still probably true. But I add the caveat, and a lot of people do add the same one, that only do that if you're good at them. If you're not good at short stories, it's not going to be a good way for you to break in. And I'm not good at them. Short story writing, I think, is a talent you have to practice and cultivate, just like novel writing. And I cultivated my novel writing skills. I learned how to plot over 200,000 words. I learned how to do all of these sorts of things. I didn't practice that on the shorter form, and the end result is I can write great novels and terrible short stories.
Would you ever consider practicing writing short stories?
I have practiced. It's fun. It's, you know, maybe in the same way that a professional basketball player might decide to take up golf. You know, and so I do occasionally write short stories. Amazon published one,
yes.
You know, which is where my my best-selling author thing came from. I was best-selling short story on Amazon for one day. But I do enjoy it. I just don't think I'm as good at it. The Hope of the Elantris story works because it's a tie-in to the Elantris book. It's more like a deleted chapter than it is, you know, it does have its own characters and its own arc and things like that, but I can't do anything really short. I mean, that one's novella length. All of my short stories are novella length.
So you would never do a collection of short stories?
You know, probably, maybe. If I did, I would just probably self-publish it through Lulu or something. It'd be a curiosity that people who enjoyed my work could buy and look at. I don't consider my short stories personally of a professional enough level that I would want to go through Tor or anyone like that because, you know, yeah, you should know what you're getting. And I think if you were to buy it off of my website with a caveat, me saying, I'm not as good at this as I am at novels, just be aware of that. I think that that would be an interesting thing for people to try, and maybe I'll get better at it. You know, it's fun to practice, but for right now, I focus on novels. I've written 20 of those now, and so I think I know what I'm doing. Maybe.
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 Do you have a certain writing routine when you sit down to write every day?
Yes and no. I say I do, but it breaks down pretty quickly. I mean, you have a convention like this. There's no way to get any real writing time in during a convention. And, you know, I was much better when I was trying to break in because now I'll get in the mail, here's a rewrite of this, you need to get this done, which would mean that I have to leave a project out alone and get to the rewrite, to do a rewrite, which I just want to get through as quickly as I can, which then throws off all of my rhythms and all of these sorts of things. And I got married last year, and that kind of has thrown everything for a loop as well. So I did when I was trying to break in. When I was trying to break in, it was very nice. I think I got more writing time before I got published than I do now, because I worked a graveyard shift at a hotel. And so what I did was I would go to work every night, and I would write from midnight to 5 a.m. And that's just what I did. And I did that 5 days a week, and I got lots of good writing time in then. Nowadays, I get up and I have like a dozen emails from various sources I need to deal with, and then I've got rewrites I need to worry about, and then I've got conventions and book signings and whatnot. And so when I do get writing time, I tend to write a whole lot at once. You know, I take like a month off and just write and don't do anything else, don't answer my email. And then I come up for air and spend a couple weeks just doing the email and the rewrites and things like that. And then I go back to the writing.
Do you use any warm-up exercises before you start writing? Get into the work that you're
only
doing?
If I'm having troubles. I use those as tools if I'm having a trouble. The main one I use is if I'm having trouble getting into the writing, I go back to basic sensory information and I do a very detailed sensory description of what's going on to pull me into the scene. And sometimes I'll go back and delete that because it'll be overwritten.
But it is tied to the project that you're working
on.
Yes,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you do if your writing stalls and you kind of get stuck and you don't know how to progress in the scene?
If that happens, the only times that happens with me is when one of a couple things are happening. Number one, I'm just not feeling like writing that day. That passes quickly for me. If I take a day off and play video games and come back, I'm good the next day. If there's a fundamental flaw in the story, that can stop me too. And in that case, I end up having to do a serious overhaul of the book, a rewrite overhaul.
You start from the beginning?
Well, no, I do a rewrite. Like I look back at what I've written and I will change something drastically. If a character isn't working, I may cut that character out and put a new one in the place, or I may rework their motivations drastically, that sort of thing. And on very rare occasions, I've just simply tossed a project. It's happened to me twice now where I've just said, this book isn't working, I don't like this book. But it's hard, I don't want to give the impression that that's what people should do who are new writers, because I have the opinion that that should be the rare exception that you toss a project. In most, 95% of the cases, I think you should finish what you start, particularly if you're trying to break in, because writing through those tough points is going to teach you how to write through them. And nowadays, most tough points I can just write through. It's a bad scene. Yes, I know it's a bad scene. I'll fix it in post. I'll just write it anyway and move on to the next part.
But you don't ever throw away the manuscript.
Oh, no. I keep it tucked away. But there is one, like book number 9, I never finished. It's still sitting on my files. It will probably never be finished because my writing skills have improved, so much that if I were to write it again, I would have to start from scratch. The other one I threw away was one I threw away actually just last year. And I just couldn't get into the characters. And if I can't get into the characters, I just can't write the book. And that was a side project, it was an on-spec thing, as we call it. And so I couldn't, of course, throw away Mistborn 3. But fortunately, that one worked really well.
Where do you start your stories from? Do you start with the character? Do you start with the society as a whole?
It depends on the book. I work from the framework that there's plot, setting, and character. And a good book has good ideas for each character, for several aspects of the plot, and for several aspects of the setting. One idea doesn't make a book. Two or three ideas doesn't make a book. 10 or 12 ideas makes a book, in my opinion. And 10 or 12 hooks. 10 or 12 things that you could say in one sentence that would make this book distinctive. Which ones of those come first depends on the novel. For Elantris, the characters were first. For Mistborn, the plot was first. Mistborn, I wanted to tell a heist story in a fantasy setting. That was, what started. Of course, it grew beyond that. It's not really what the book even is anymore, but that's what started me. That mixed with the concept of what if the fantasy hero, farm boy peasant, ended up losing and the Dark Lord won. What would that, those two things mixing together made me want to write that book. With the Elantris, I wanted to write a story about a person who was thrown into a leper colony. Locked in this sort of prison for people who have this terrible disease. And so then it morphed into a magical disease and things like that. But the character was first.
Are you writing full-time now?
I am. I started writing full-time the moment I got my first advance check. I quit my job then. Which was because I was single and lived in my friend's basement and I could get away with that. I could live on $10,000 a year, which is, about what I make. I supplemented a little bit with teaching, so I've lived on about $13,000 for about 3 or 4 years. And then royalties kicked in, and then the second contract with Alcatraz versus the Evil Librarian for the Scholastic books. When that kicked in, two incomes turned out to me actually making a pretty normal living now, compared to what all my friends are making. I'm making about the same amount, which is kind of different for me as a writer.
What is the biggest perception about a full-time writer and their job and what they do?
The biggest wrong misconception?
Misconception.
Oh, boy, I don't know.
Or the biggest surprise that you had once you started writing full-time?
When I wrote, the biggest surprise was I thought I'd have more writing time, and I don't. I have, I'm facetious, and I do probably have more writing time. I do spend more time writing, but I'm surprised at how little time I have, even still, with all the other things that I need to be doing, that was a surprise to me. It was kind of a wake-up call I love going to conventions. I love doing book signings, but the time disappears pretty quickly, and I always feel like I don't have enough time to work on all the projects I want to. I have so many books I want to write, and yet now I'm locked into contracts to write these ones I want to write those too, but there's just not enough time.
Well, then how do you meet your deadlines if you've got everything else going on? Lack of sleep?
No, just loving writing, and so they get done. I'm ahead on my tour contracts by like 3 books, and I'm ahead on my Scholastic contract by 1 book. And so, I love writing, and so it's a feel, it's a sense, it's a perception that I don't have very much writing time, but I really do have enough, I guess.
All right, let's go into your books.
Okay.
You're writing a book called Warbreaker.
Yes, Warbreaker is finished.
It is finished.
Yes.
You've been releasing rough drafts of that online.
I have.
Is that scary to have a imperfect draft out there for people to read?
You know what, honestly, it's more scary for my editor and my agent than it is for me. How should I say? it doesn't bother me to have people read my drafts. Maybe it's because I've been in writing groups since, you know, I started writing, you know, with a professional mindset since I, you know, my early 20s. I've been in writing groups. People have always seen my rough drafts. I know they're weaker, but, you know, it doesn't bother me for some reason.
Are you afraid that it might turn some readers off and just get that and say, oh, he's a hack?
You know, I think that I have that kind of thought, worry a little bit, but at the same time, you know, some artists that I like to watch, I love seeing their sketchbook. And that's what I see this as, is sketchwork. And even in the artists I like, their sketchwork impresses me. And I say, wow, that's how the framework of what they draw. And I think that if people were to read this, they would see that same thing. Now, you know, and I've been releasing better and better drafts as it's gone along. You know, we're on the third draft right now. You can download the whole third draft of the book. Which, you know, it's getting to the point that it's pretty clean. It's just now I need to fix some... It's kind of interesting, when my agent or my editor look at a book, neither one of them ever say if it's a good book or a bad book, ever. They always say, this is how much work this one is going to take to be published with. That's how they view books. And Warbreaker has some work before it's my best, you know, before it's my best foot forward. But those are things that are, I don't know that the average reader would notice. It's just that by changing it, the book will feel better. And it's hard to explain to writers. I guess I could explain it better. I mean, it's things where some character motivations need to be fleshed out. It's things where some world-building elements have a few holes in them that I need to make sure I explain. It's where there's one weak character who I need to decide if I want to cut, and it's just a side character, or if I want to leave and strengthen, that sort of thing.
From a writer's standpoint, aspiring writer's standpoint, it's fascinating to see the changes from draft to draft and how things improve and get better and see that it is possible to change it.
Well, and I will be releasing, hopefully, I think it'll be, not next week, but the week after. Microsoft Word has that track changes function.
Yes.
I will be releasing a complete document of Warbreaker that'll show you the changes I made between the first, the 1.0 and the 2.0, and then also the 1.0 and the 3.0, if somebody wants to look. And so it'll show each word I crossed out and each word I added, which
I think you
made
did that
interesting.
For
I did
Elantris,
that. Yeah.
And that was just incredible to see that on the page. But didn't she start posting Warbreaker before so?
Yes.
And was that a factor in selling it to her, the fact that there is a version,
you know,
already out there?
I asked my editor if it was okay. And my tour books, yes, I haven't sold it, but there's an understanding, like, you know, that they were going to buy more books for me. We all knew I was going to. It's just a matter of when do we sign the contract. And so they knew that they were going to pick up the book, and Tom Doherty actually gave an okay on releasing it online first as publicity for my other books. And so the research has shown that if people read something online, they're actually more likely to buy it than if they haven't. And so for a writer like me, it's not, we don't think it'll do a hit in sales. We think it will boost sales. And if not, you know, then we're all in this for the writing and for the love of the stories. And so it's not a big deal to me if I have one book that I give away for free. And it ends up, you know, but Tor will be publishing it, so I'm pretty sure that it'll sell just as much as others.
Because there's a lot of writers out there that are afraid to put their own work on their website to get people interested because they consider that already published, and so a publisher would not want to
buy. And you know, with a first-time author, I would be scared if I haven't sold anything yet. I would counsel to avoid doing that. I'd counsel to go into it with your eyes open. Don't release every book that you've written, but, you know, John Scalzi, who I have to, by the way, it's not for me to say, Scalzi! That's my evil nemesis. He released the way he got sold was by releasing his first book on his blog. Now, he had a high readership blog. He was high profile in the blogging community, but Patrick Nielsen Hayden, who's an editor at Tor, is also a high profile blogger, and saw the story there and bought it based on what he was releasing on his website. So Tor is more open-minded. Also, you know, Bayon is very good with releasing books online and things like that. But some of the more corporate publishers, not the editor's fault, but the publishers are more, there's, you know, if you go to Penguin, they're not going to want to do that. Scholastic doesn't want me to release chapters, you know, they said, you can release one, maybe two, you know, with tour, they're like, yeah, put the whole thing up, that's okay. And it's just, it's a matter of, over there, that's more corporate, they just want to be more careful, and that's very understandable. So for a new author, if you're going to do it, just make sure you do it with your eyes open, and don't give, I wouldn't say give everything away. I would say, you could try releasing one book to get publicity, but you also want to have other books that you're sending out that you haven't, so that those publishers who wouldn't appreciate the book being released online, you have something to send them out.
Speaking of online, why did you decide to do annotations for your books and put them on your website?
Because I love the director's commentary on DVDs.
Yes.
And so I thought, can I do that for books?
Do you think anybody would be interested in those?
I have no clue. I don't even know if anybody reads them. The thing about it is, people spend $30 on one of my hardbacks. I publish, to be honest, I publish kind of, I'm probably one of the most expensive people that Tor publishes, because $30 is the upper limit of what they charge for books, and I'm not printing as many copies as the other people who are getting $30 books like Robert Jordan. And so the margins on mine, you know, my books are expensive. I'm publishing Lexuses. And so if people are going to buy fantasy Lexuses, I figure they need to get all the perks, you know, like the heated seats and the adjustable seats and like the sunroof and stuff. And so I try to throw all those on my website to say, if you're going to spend $30 on a book of mine, you're also going to get an annotation for every chapter. You're going to get all the deleted scenes. You're going to get a lot of the background, you know, essay work that led me. You know, Warbreaker, I will be posting the quote-unquote Bible, the document I worked from that had my plot outline and all that stuff. I'll be posting that online so that people can download it and see the document I worked from to write the book. And I want to give all these things because I know my books are expensive. And I want to say, if you're going to spend the money on them, here's what I want to give you as bonuses.
Now, you mentioned once on your website that you might publish the annotations as a separate
Yes.
book.
Yes. You know, I like the whole Lulu thing. Lulu is a print-on-demand. And I've been thinking about, you know, a lot of people don't like reading on the screen. And so I've found that on Lulu, I could publish, you know, for $14 a trade paperback that would make a few bucks for my brother who hosts my site and would give people who didn't want it on screen copies of all the annotations. It'd probably be all the annotations and all the deleted scenes, and then probably Hope Volantris, the short story, you know, just kind of an omnibus of all the bonus material I've released. So I probably would do that eventually.
One of the books that you've been working on recently, you named it Scribbler.
Scribbler, yes.
You posted the prologue in the first chapter, I think
yes.
It's a teaser, and I have to tell you I want more.
Oh, I will be posting the first three chapters of that.
Okay.
So chapter two went up on Wednesday, chapter three will go up next week.
But that is a book that you wanted to go and back and work on Dragonstone.
Yes.
And that popped into your head. How do you manage all the different ideas at the same time?
It's
getting
rough.
Worked out?
And to be fun and loony, it's for people who like my books, who want something more lighthearted, that's what this book is. It's got one of my kind of signature branded magic systems, but a really wacky one. Rather, it's something I could never do in one of my Tor books, because my Tor books take themselves seriously. I want everything to be interwoven, I want the world building to be solid, I don't want it to be self-referential at all. This book is self-referential, in fact, in that it kind of makes fun of who I am as an author.
Why did you decide to go in the direction of writing a young adult book?
Actually, because I was finished Mistborn 2, and I needed to do something else for a break, and this is just what popped out. I love the young adult genre. I've been reading a lot in it. I think that some of the really exciting fantasy of the late 90s, early 2000s was in young adults. Philip Pullman, Garth Nix, some of these people were doing just fantastic work that, you know, had world building better than a lot of the adult books that were coming out at the time. And so, and I wanted to see, you know, try writing something for me at the age where I got into fantasy. And so that's just a little side project I decided I wanted to do, and then it ended up going far further than I expected it to.
How many Alcatraz books will there be?
I sold four. I want six. We'll see how the first one sells and see if I can sell two more.
Okay.
Otherwise, it'll end at four.
One of the things that I just love about your writing is your magic systems.
Uh-huh.
How do you come up with such interesting and integrated magic systems in the world that you feel? How do you approach that?
I look for things I haven't seen before. I look for conflicts that I haven't seen before that are interesting. You know, there's so many components to go into a good magic system. In my opinion, it has to have a nice visual component, which allows you for some interesting descriptions. It has to have an interesting economical or at least sociological component. I like it when it interferes with economics because that helps you integrate. It's nice when you can also work the magic like it did in launch system to the religions a little bit, because the more interconnected things are, the better. And so that's my first thing, is interconnect. And then also having the interesting interesting conflicts built into the magic system. Interesting costs, interesting effects. It's just something that fascinates me about fantasy, and it's one of the reasons why I write fantasy instead of something else. It's because I can have the characters and the setting and the plot plus cool magic, so why not? But how do I don't know, really. It's just something that comes naturally to me.
How much research do you do for the magic system?
Depends on the magic system. In Elantris, I needed to know a lot. Actually, Scribbler's the one I've done the most research for, because Scribbler is based on Euclidean geometry. And so I had to go back and actually bone up on my basic geometry and learn about circles and squares and triangles and things like that and sine waves and whatnot, which the reader doesn't need to know about. I don't like magics where you have to have a PhD to understand them, but I like it when the underlying framework all works. For Elantris, I did a little bit of research into Chinese characters so I could kind of understand the theory of logographic writing systems. Mistborn was mostly just me coming up with it and then running it by people I know who are good with physics, who could point out holes in my physics. You know, I have a big... I started off as a scientist, you know, and I went to college as a scientist. And so I like magic that's, you know, we call it hard magic, hard fantasy. Michael Swanwick, I believe, coined that phrase. And it's... I like stories where the magic is... has a defined set of rules, which then I can play with and have the characters play with, and it just comes, it's fun.
Several of your books, Elantris and Mistborn, have different points of views.
Yes.
How do you determine which point of view character is going to be doing the narrative at that point?
Mm-hmm.
And Alcatraz is first person.
First person.
So how do you make the distinction of which books you're going to tell in third person versus first?
You know, I wrote Alcatraz in third, and my agent said this needs to be first, and he was right. Alcatraz is first because of the humor, the quirky narrative style, which is part of what makes that book work. I was trying to do it with a third-person narrator, and it made much more sense to have it to fold it into the same character. With my other books, I look for the conflict. Who's at conflict at this point? And that's whose viewpoint I try to tell things from at that part of the story. Elantris, and, you know, also who's making the decisions. Mistborn starts more with Kelsier's viewpoints and then transitions into Vin's viewpoints more and more. And the reason for that is Kelsier is making the decisions and is having the conflict at the beginning. It actually transitions into Vin making the decisions and having the conflict in the second half of the book, and so we see less of Kelsier and more of Vin, which is just the way it naturally felt like it should work for me in the book.
Are you afraid that one character might hijack all your point of view?
You know, I'm less worried about that and more worried about readers reading and liking one character a lot and not the others, and that undermining the book for them. Elantris has that problem because there's, you know, three distinct characters who have very different plots going on. And what I found is people tend to latch onto one, and when they latch onto one, it's not that the others are bad, it's just that they get frustrated when they can't read that one. And so it sometimes, for some readers, kind of undermines the story a little bit. But that's how Elantris was, and I'm happy with how that worked. But, you know, that is a consideration sometimes.
Now, you've written in fantasy and you've written a young adult.
Yes.
Have you ever considered writing science fiction or mystery or...
I've written two science fictions, unpublished, during my early days when I was trying to decide what to do. I eventually settled on fantasy because I feel like I can do everything I want in fantasy, and I can't do everything I want in other genres. That doesn't mean that someday I won't try, but I think I would have a lot of trouble not putting a fantastical element or two into my stories. A lot of my short stories, meaning I've written five, and I think three of them are science fiction, so the majority of my short stories are science fiction because it's easier to world build quickly in a science fiction, I've found. But, you know, general fiction really hasn't interested me that much. I could see myself doing a thriller someday, maybe. But, you know, I love fantasy. I love writing fantasy. I love reading fantasy. So, for now, that's what I want to do.
How do you approach the language in fantasy when you can create your own language?
Right.
How do you make sure you don't get carried away with that? And how do you approach the language when you turn and write a young adult book?
In my young adult books, Alcatraz, actually, Scribbler's actually young adult as well. Alcatraz is a middle grade, Scribbler's young adult. Both of those I've chosen to use this world as a launching pad to the story. And so Alcatraz takes place in this world, except there's a giant librarian conspiracy that no one knows about, and a lot of fantastical elements going on hidden in the libraries. Scribbler is alternate history, and so it's more, I've changed a lot of things. For instance, America is no longer a continent, it's a set of islands, each one where one of the states would be, that sort of thing. So but with my tour fantasies, my high fantasies, as you might call them, it depends on what's important for the conflict of the story. In Elantris, language was very important to the magic and the story, and because I was dealing with different cultures who each spoke different languages, I made sure to work a lot on the languages. Mistborn, there's an empire that's stamped out all other cultures. There's a homogeneous sort of, there's different, you know, ethnic sects and things, but there's one language. Language was not as important to the magic, and so I didn't world build the language as much. It all comes down to what does this book need.
When you're writing it, though, are you concerned that you're making it too colloquial?
I worry about that, but only a tiny, tiny amount. I'm of the philosophy, there are authors who write excellent books where people speak in the quote, speak as they would in a previous time. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell is a good example of this. I don't write those books. What I write is I come work from the premise that most of my worlds are advanced to the point that they've hit 18th, 19th century society, even if their technology hasn't caught up. And I like to write about people, honestly, who are sympathetic and who I understand. When I read a book like Doomsday Book, I love Doomsday Book, but I don't get into the characters because Doomsday Book is a book that takes place historically and is written very accurately with the way that people would think. They think so differently from me that I don't empathize with them as much. And I, honestly, you could call it a fallacy in my writing. I just say I like to write about people I understand. And so my characters, this is one of the reasons why Mistborn is actually more of a 19th century fantasy, meaning the technology is about 1810. Elantris actually sent during its equivalent of the Renaissance. I don't want to go medieval because I want my characters to be more understandable. So.
Hey, now you also teach creative writing.
I do.
What is the best advice you can give a new writer, and what is the most annoying thing that you see in new writers in their work?
The best advice I can say is sit in the chair and just keep writing, and don't let yourself jump projects. The most annoying thing is when I get somebody who's working on 30 books, of which they have two chapters of each one. I say, sit down, the way to learn to write a book is to write a book. The first one's going to be a disaster. And the advice I would give to new writers is don't be afraid to suck at writing, because I think one of the reasons people stop projects is because they get three or four chapters in and realize it's not matching the vision in their head of this great book that they thought they could write, and they get discouraged. And I say to them, it's like a piano player learning to play Rachmaninoff. You may have a tape where it's played perfectly. You can't play it that perfectly until you've played it poorly a few times. And the same thing with a novel. You can't write beautiful novels like the ones you're reading until you've written poor novels a couple of times, in my opinion. And the only way to learn to plot over a large scale like that is to write over a large scale and have it turn out to be a disaster.
One last question. Yep. What is the most important thing a writer should have at their desk with them when they're writing?
Equipment, reference, a motto? A glass of water. one of my books. I don't know, that means they bought them. What's the most important thing? You know, if you could tape something that said sit in the chair to the top of your monitor so that you didn't get up and leave, or even figuratively start surfing the web or things like this, that would probably be, I mean, my best advice is just writers write. Keep writing. Stop dreaming, start writing. Don't let yourself world build for more than a couple of weeks, particularly when you're starting off. Later on, you know, you'll find that if you need more world building, you can spend months world building. But for a new writer, you need to be writing. You need to be finishing, and you need to be producing books.
And then sending them out.
And then sending them out, yes. That's an important part as well.
All right, if you want to check out more of Brandon Sanderson, you can go to his website, www.brandonsanderson.com.
Yep. Free book is on there. Annotations for all my books are on there. Deleted scenes.
Updates. Mm-hmm. Ideas of the days.
Yes. Story prompts. I do post story prompts.
How do you say that?
Amphigory.
Yes.
Amphigory.
We call
them
groaners in my family.
Really bad puns. Yes. I do those as well. I try to update at least 4 times a week on my blog.
Very good. And a wealth of information for any new writers out there. So I want to thank you, Brandon.
Well, thank you, Gwen.
It was fantastic.
Yep.
Great advice.
That's all we have for you today at It's the Story Stupid, the Word Trip podcast. Please join us again next time. We have another interview lined up with Dave Wolverton. Until then, remember, it's the story, stupid.